The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily, the live stream of this program every morning here in Central Oklahoma, 7 a.m. We're a little bit staggered right now with our listeners in Europe. That will change, I think, in a week and a half. In any event, they're 5 hours ahead right now, soon to be six. But you can get the live stream at thetrumpet.com website, thetrumpet.com/live. You can also send us some feedback, td@kpcg.fm. That's the email address. Got a good response, by the way, in response to yesterday's program about, the back end of it, on not quitting, how that winners never quit. It says here, the last event I participated in was a 26-mile run that was held down in Birmingham, Alabama. It says, at the 16-mile marker, I ran out of steam, but I refused to quit. For the last, the last 10 miles, I walked. I finished the marathon in a bit over 4 hours. I was determined, it says, to finish the race. Now I find myself in a much more serious event, which inhabits eternal consequences, the entrance into God's kingdom. It says here, since October 15th, 2005, my life has been about a test of the wills. But I shall never give up. Quitting is not in my DNA, it says. Jesus Christ was not a quitter, and neither am I. I was born to be a winner. Thanks to you, sir, and the staff, the entire staff at headquarters, for your kind services and hard work, which is for the benefit of all mankind. So if we have time later on this program, we'll continue with our study, you know, about Jesus and what he said regarding those who endure to the end. We have to endure in this race that we're in. We'll come to that in the second segment. But with this segment, I want to get into some of the news and talk here initially about the Biden border crisis. This is something that the Biden administration, this illegitimate presidency, this is something that they not only have allowed, they want this. They have invited in these invaders. It's really an attack. It's an invasion. And you look at some of the numbers, the staggering numbers. And listen to the White House press secretary as she says, yeah, we're going to take them in. We're not going to send them back. We've got new policies in place. It is wide open. They're proud of it. Now, as far as the living in cages and those kinds of things, they're trying to cover that up. They're trying to cover up the lawlessness, the corruption. But as far as the numbers, these are potential Democrat voters, you have to understand. So they want this. It says here, this is from Fox News yesterday. It says, whether one calls it a crisis or a challenge, the U.S.-Mexico border has become a man-made disaster, handcrafted by President Joe Biden. It says, candidate Biden promised illegal aliens red carpet treatment, amnesty, and citizenship. He promised them this. I'll play a montage later that says exactly that. He campaigned on this. Now he's backing away. The other night he's with George Stephanopoulos and he's saying, look, I didn't cause this. You can't put this on me. And then the press secretary, she says, well, you know, we inherited a system that was broken. So we're trying to fix it. They're blaming Donald Trump for this. Donald Trump was closing the border. Donald Trump was finishing the wall. Donald Trump was eliminating so many of these crises. And here they come along immediately, day one, with executive action. On day one, they open the border, and then in come all of these illegals. And a lot of them are wearing Biden shirts. Can you believe this? They are ecstatic
to see this illegitimate presidency in place, because this is their opportunity to get to America. And you can hardly blame them, given what they're coming out of. On the other hand, Tucker Carlson's had a segment the last couple of nights. I guess he went down to El Salvador and met with the president there. And the president there talked about how all of this mass immigration is bad for his country. It's bad for the United States, he said, and it's bad for his country. And I think the figure that Carlson gave was something like a third of the people in his country now living in the United States. It's a broken system for his country and for the United States. And yet, in listening to the Biden administration, you would think there's no problem. This is from, again, Fox News. They've gotten the message. They've received the message in Central and South America, and they are streaming in, a flood of them. It says here, the customs and border protections encounters with single adults on the southern frontier climbed 157% in January 2021, I should say, versus January of last year. It says CBP confronted 100,000 illegals last month, up 97% from February of last year. I mean, these are staggering statistics. It says the highest level of such run-ins in 15 Februaries, according to Reuters. This included 9,000 unaccompanied children. 3,000 kids were under 12. And so they're putting these kids in detention centers, in detention facilities, in cages. It says a CBP detention facility in Donna, Texas, held some 1,800 illegal aliens on March 2nd. 729% of its 250-person capacity. Just overflowing at these detention facilities. Jennifer Palmieri, it says, Hillary Clinton's former communication director, revealed this family secret in a 2018 Center for American Progress in a memo. She called DACA recipients whose parents illegally accompanied them into the U.S. a critical component of the Democrat Party's future electoral success. See, this is important to them. This is not something they're trying to manage or they're trying to get a hold of or get under control. They want this. They are encouraging this. They are, like President Trump said on Bartiromo's show the other night, this is destroying the United States. It's destroying our nation. And it's going to get worse, he said. This is just the beginning. We're just 2 months in. It's going to get a lot worse. Listen to ABC. I mean, and you can find reports like this on CNN as well. If the mainstream, if the propaganda media is shocked, what does that tell you about the extent of this problem? This is ABC from a couple days ago, clip one.
More than 13,000 unaccompanied minors are in U.S. custody, and the Biden administration is searching for places to house them amid new reports of dire conditions. The Homeland Security Secretary is standing by to talk to George live. But first, let's go to our chief White House correspondent, Cecilia Vega, at the border in Mission, Texas. Good morning, Cecilia.
Michael, good morning to you. The Border Patrol just telling our team just a few minutes ago that within the last couple hours, they got 10 people trying to run across the border right here behind me. One Border Patrol agent telling me that it is total mayhem when the sun goes down out here. And the people I'm talking to on the ground say they expect to see even more migrants trying to cross in the coming weeks, trying to beat this summer heat. They want to come during the spring. Look, the Biden administration is not calling this a crisis. It is certainly a political crisis right now. You had Republicans on the ground on the border yesterday trying to shine light on this. The Democrats that I'm talking to privately are growing increasingly frustrated.
Democrats, too, that she's talking to. That's not Fox News. That's ABC. Talking about the dire conditions at the southern border. It's out of control. And no one in the Biden administration will do anything about it. You've got the governor of Texas, Governor Abbott. You've got the lieutenant governor. They're sounding the alarm. They're on TV every day saying we've got to stop this. But it's only the beginning. Listen to Jen Psaki yesterday as she talks about the bad orange man, what they inherited from Donald Trump. Clip two.
Well, the situation on the ground is certainly challenging, in part because we inherited a dismantled system that wasn't prepared for processing asylum requests. We are working to repair what has been an unprepared and dismantled system. It's going to take some time.
They got a dismantled system from Donald Trump. You see, that's all that they have. That's all they got. It's his fault. If it is a problem, if you and the press can identify it as a problem, well, just so you know, it's Donald Trump who caused this. They said the same thing this week about the shooting in Atlanta. These massage parlors, these Asian women, six of them, I think six or eight, six are women. And immediately, it doesn't take but 2 seconds, and the propaganda media comes forward and says it's because of racism. And guess who's the cause of it? That would be Donald Trump. And last night, I watched a little bit of Chris Cuomo's show. Don't ask me why. But there's the Asian actor from Hollywood. He's on talking about all of these stereotypes and the racism that's just embedded into our DNA. And so it's not just with blacks. Now it's Asians. It's Latinos. It's everyone. They rush to the microphone and say the problem is with white people, most notably, of course, Donald Trump. You know why? Because, well, he called the virus last year the Wuhan virus. Can you believe that? He actually said it came from China. And so that's the reason there's this uptick of violence against Asian Americans. Listen to the propaganda media before they decided this would be a good attack point or a good strategy of attack against Donald Trump. Listen to how they described the virus last year, clip 7.
This is all happening in a time that we're starting to see a message shift here, because you're starting to hear the Republicans, especially Trump Co., calling it the Wuhan or the Chinese coronavirus. They're looking for someone to blame.
Concern is growing this morning over an outbreak of a new SARS-like virus in China. At least 6 people have died from the Wuhan coronavirus.
The Wuhan coronavirus.
The 34-year-old ophthalmologist diagnosed Saturday with the Wuhan coronavirus.
The Wuhan coronavirus.
What more can you tell us about the similarities or differences between SARS and the Wuhan coronavirus?
The Wuhan coronavirus in China.
The Wuhan coronavirus.
Fears continue to grow over the outbreak of the Wuhan coronavirus.
The Wuhan coronavirus.
We have new information about how the Wuhan coronavirus is spread.
What a bunch of frauds. And then they, soon after all of that, they realize, hey, we could actually accuse Donald Trump of being racist for saying that. So then they stop saying it, and now the narrative is that because Donald Trump said the Wuhan virus, just like all of them did, that's the reason you had that mass shooting in Atlanta. These people, they want to hurt and divide and destroy America. That's why they rush to the microphone the way that they do. That's why they're opening the borders. They are enemies of America's traditions. They are enemies of America as you've known it to be. They want something completely different and new. They want a communist-style government. They admire the communist Chinese. They're working in tandem with them. What about, I mentioned that shooting the other day in Chicago. 15 black people. Not killed, two of them killed, 13 of them taking gunfire, 15 shot. What caused that? Was that racially motivated? And do those lives matter? Does that get any coverage? Are you going to get a black actor from Hollywood filling up an entire segment on Chris Cuomo's show? Happens every weekend in Chicago. The violence, it's a problem with human nature. And it's affected all races. And the problem is getting worse. This story from the Washington Examiner says last June, the city of Portland, Oregon, hopped on the defund the police bandwagon, and now it's flooded with gun violence, and the mayor is already backtracking from his support for the cuts. So he's a, you know, he's a radical leftist, the mayor of Portland. He was out there right in front of the defund the police movement, and the police were actually defunded. They actually followed through. And now there's this explosion of gun violence in Portland. Listen to this. It says, Wheeler has requested $2 million in emergency funding for the police department, pointing directly to the surge in gun violence. At this point last year, Portland had seen just one homicide. This year, that number is 20, with 208 shootings in the city so far. We're just 2.5 months into the year. And last year at this time, it was one homicide. This year, it's 20. And listen to this. It says riots. Well, let me back up. It says riots are back once again in the city thanks to Wheeler's spinelessness. Rioters have once again targeted a federal courthouse in the city, a reprise of the violent storming of the courthouse last July. In June, it was reported that the city lost around $24 million due to the riots. Damage to federal buildings totals roughly $2.3 million. This is not an insurrection, by the way. Don't even think that. It's nothing like January the 6th. The only violence that they're concerned about is what comes from Trump supporters. Open the borders. Four of the people they've detained coming in from the southern border are on the terrorist watch list. These are just the ones that they've caught. And they keep telling us what you need to be worried about is what happened on January the 6th. Now, those borders, they're nice and tight and well secured. The borders around Washington, D.C. But certainly not at the southern border of the United States. And terrorists are coming through. This says Wheeler backed the Portland City Council's decision to cut $15 million from the police budget last June, which included disbanding police units that investigate gun violence. They get rid of the unit that investigates gun violence, and guess what happens? There's an explosion of gun violence. What causes that? Is it racially motivated? Shouldn't we look into this? Or Chicago? But no, it's so predictable. Anything that they can do to divide, anything that they can do to just spew hatred, only running with the story that fits comfortably into their narrative. And these tragedies, these other tragedies, just completely ignored. Completely ignored. Listen to this newsbusters montage. I think it's a back and forth with the White House press secretary and a Fox News reporter. And this is coming back to the subject of the border crisis. Clip 4.
Is the White House or DHS instructing border agents to refuse ride-along requests from reporters, because that's what a lot of our folks on the ground are hearing?
Again, I think we've seen, watching a number of the reports you all do, a number of Border Patrol officials who are quoted in them, who appear in them, and certainly from the White House, we support that.
Our reporters used to be able to get ride-alongs during the Trump administration, mm-hmm. and you all came in and promised to be the most truthful and transparent administration, and you all, you know, oversee the Department of Homeland Security. So if you all wanted to grant access to the press, couldn't you just tell DHS to do it?
Again, we fully support transparency.
Even as they're telling reporters at the southern border, no, you can't ride along with our agents. You can't see what's actually happening. We're not going to let you get that close. Now, and this reporter says, under Trump, we were able to go anywhere. We could see it, we could report on it, and so on. You know, and this is a point my father made with respect to the Mueller investigation in the latest Trumpet, how that it had two aims. For one, it was to go after their enemy, Donald Trump. But the secondary aim of that fraud of an investigation was to cover up their lawlessness. And more, you pick the storyline. The chief aim or objective among these radical Democrats is to cover up their lawlessness, to cover up their sin. Here's a reporter saying, look, you've said you're transparent, and why won't you let us see these detention facilities? Why won't you let us go along? Why won't you let us have these ride-alongs like we had under the Trump years? This is from NBC. Like I said earlier, this is not just Fox News here. You look at the reports from CNN, from NBC, and these are people that are shocked at what's happening. That says something about the extent of the problem. NBC says the Biden administration is restricting the information Border Patrol agents and sector chiefs can share with the media as a surge of migrants tests the agency's capacity at the southern border. So the Biden administration coming in now is telling the border agents, look, don't tell the press what's going on. Isn't that nice? Isn't that comforting? Cover it up. We know it's bad, but just cover it up. And then don't let them ride along either. This is NBC. It says the officials say the restrictions are seen as an unofficial gag order and are often referred to that way among colleagues. The officials requested anonymity because they are not authorized to speak to the media about the topic. It says further on, multiple news organizations, including NBC News, have requested access to or photos from inside overcrowded border processing facilities holding unaccompanied migrant children. They have been denied. They've been denied. You can't go into those detention facilities. You can't go look at the cages. That's only for the Trump years. And we've got to try to blow that out of proportion. Those were Obama cages, by the way. So it was Obama and Biden now. And then for 4 years, Donald Trump was actually doing things that was securing the border, that was eliminating these kinds of crises. But now it's a full-blown disaster. And then the media, they're asking the border agents, they're asking the Biden administration, can we get in there and just report on this? No, you can't. Can't ride along. And then as far as the agents themselves are concerned, lips are sealed. It says here, at the height of the Trump administration's child separation policy in June 2018, it allowed media to tour facilities where separated children were held. It allowed this. You know, you go back to, I think I might have read over that other article from Fox News where it talks about how many of these people are testing positive for COVID-19. And yet still, they're just being turned loose. The rest of the country has to lock down. If you, as an ordinary American, want to travel internationally, like I've mentioned with our crew heading out today, well, you've got to go and get a COVID test, make sure that you test negative. It's $250. $250 that I had to pay yesterday to just show the UK that I don't have COVID-19. I mean, we have really got to clamp things down. Now, for people streaming in illegally, even if they have COVID, there's one report saying that 11% of them do. Another said 6%, which, going by the numbers coming in, more than 100,000, I mean, that's a staggering number of COVID positives, and they're just being let go? Well, we've got to, because we can't send them home. This is America Today. It says that this is NBC again. The new restrictions have been passed down verbally, not through an official memo. The gag order. They've just passed it along verbally, because they certainly don't want to see it in print, because it shows just how disingenuous they are when they say, yeah, we're transparent. We're all about transparency. They say it, but then what are they doing? Look at their actions. This is an administration that rolled out the red carpet for these migrants, and they have gotten the message loud and clear. Never mind what Joe Biden is saying this week, that he's not the cause of this. Listen to this short montage comparing what he's saying now with what he has said previously. Clip 5.
The idea that Joe Biden said, come, they're there seeking asylum. First time ever we've told people they can't come to America. That ends. The cage is closed. The idea that Joe Biden said, come.
We immediately surge to the border. All those people are seeking asylum. They deserve to be heard. That's who we are. We're a nation that says if you want to flee and you're fleeing oppression, you should come.
The idea that Joe Biden said, come.
And those who come seeking asylum, we should immediately have the capacity to absorb them, keep them safe until they can be heard.
Do you have to say quite clearly, don't come?
Yes, I can say quite clearly, don't come.
First time ever we've told people they can't come to America.
Don't leave your town or city or community.
So now they see that it's so out of control. The new policy is basically don't come just yet. We're getting everything ready for you. Don't just flood the system. We want you to come in. We're all for it. We know you're Democrat voters down the road. So let's just try to keep it controlled. It's not working. None of it's working. It's a full-scale invasion is what it amounts to. And again, you can look at prophecies in Deuteronomy talking about the strangers in our midst. And again, you look at where they're coming from, and it's no wonder they're wanting to try to get into what has been the richest country in the world. But it's funny money, even if you look into that. The $1.9 trillion stimulus package. There's another $2 trillion on the way. I mean, they're just handing out money to everybody. So if you're living in a poor country, this is your opportunity. And many of them are taking them up on it. When we come back, I just want to get to a couple more stories. One from Melanie Phillips earlier this week, together with another disturbing report in the Daily Mail. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the program, send us messages at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A child is a miraculous blessing from God, an opportunity to build his family. In his word, God says to train them up in the way that they should go, so that when they are old, they will not depart from it. But how should you train up your child? Most parents do not know. Most parenting books offer only limited help because their authors do not understand the purpose and potential of your child's mind. As a result, millions of children grow up to be hopeless without any direction in life. Many come from broken homes. Many do not have a home. This is why so many young people become delinquent, rebellious, and unsuccessful as teenagers and adults. But you can rear successful, jubilant children and avoid the heartache of an unhappy and miserable home. God has outlined how to rear obedient children in His Word. Our free book, Child Rearing with Vision, will show you how to raise children that follow after God's abundant way of life. It will help you build a strong, united family. It will help you bring God's love into your child rearing. And it will guide you through the momentous journey of preparing your child to serve God the Father forever. Request your free copy of Child Rearing with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
On CNN just now, this is from a tweet. They said, there's a real fear among Asian people about going outside of their homes right now. This is a featured story in the propaganda media. Asian people are afraid to go outside. Well, maybe that's good in the lockdown. We need to stay inside anyway so we can stay healthy, right? It says, Asian people are being scapegoated like they have been for a century in this country. Yesterday it was Muslim and Southeast Asian people after 9/11. So they know right away what the motivation is in this attack in Atlanta. And yet look at what is happening. Look at the bigger picture. Look at the lawlessness and the corruption. Look at the violence. How many people are afraid to go outside of their homes in South Chicago? This story by Melanie Phillips, she talks about the real reason women feel unsafe. Says, over the past few days, women have come forward in droves to relate stories of being harassed or assaulted by men. Indeed, there can scarcely be a woman in London, and doubtless in other towns and cities too, who doesn't feel nervous walking alone in isolated places at night. And many more have experienced some kind of harassment or threat from male strangers in the street, even in broad daylight. So this is a real concern, she says. Unfortunately, it has been hijacked by those with an extreme agenda who have shamefully appropriated and politicized this woman's murder in London in order to demonize men in general. See, when these kinds of disturbing activities happen, then immediately they have an agenda. It's like with the shooting in Atlanta. There's an agenda. We've got to attack a certain people. And here it's the same way. In this case, it's men. Men in general. It says here in the article, but there are many men for whom all such behavior would be abhorrent, this kind of evil behavior. It says they wouldn't dream of harassing, abusing, or attacking a woman. These are almost always men who have themselves been brought up in stable families with decent male role models and which adhere to strong codes of self-restraint, civility, and respect for women, where whole communities adhere to such values, often because they consist of certain religious, ethnic, or other tightly knit cultures. Women in those neighborhoods feel safe when out at night alone. She says, so this is not a problem with masculinity. It's a problem with the erosion of the social, cultural, and moral codes which restrain the savage and uncivilized in all of us. Unless there, she touches on the point that Jeremiah 17:9 says about human nature, about how it's deceitful and wicked above all things. And what happens if you don't have certain restraints or borders in place? Well, it's like the southern border. If you open up the border wide open, the flood comes in. And morally, that's what we've done to ourselves. That's what we've done to our nations. That's the point that she's making. And she says one major contributory factor to this erosion is the prevalence of pornography and the appalling reluctance of anyone to curb it. There's no one that looks at this problem and says, you know what? We need to tighten up this border security here. It's accessible to everyone with the push of a button. And the ones who are accessing it in droves, that would be the young people. That would adults too, for sure. But teenage, it's like Mr. Armstrong said in The Missing Dimension in Sex. It's a teenage dominant culture. And the influence comes in primarily two directions, violence and sex. And look at our world. Look at Chicago. Look at the airwaves. Look at the Grammys on Sunday night, as I said. You had two women simulating a lesbian sex scene. And that was on TV. That was on national TV on Sunday night. And you can say, well, that's why the ratings were so low. People are sick of it. And it is sickening. It's filthy. But I'll bet you the demographic that really did stay tuned in to that award show was the younger demographic. The young people, they love those singers. They've memorized the words. Sodom and Gomorrah. Melanie Phillips says it's not just that pornography objectifies women. It's that the images circulating on social media are as depraved and bestial as they are now widely available. Beastly images. Depraved images. Violence. Violence against women. And it's available everywhere. And no one does anything about it. No, that doesn't get canceled. That's not going to be blotted out. Maybe Dr. Seuss, but not this. Certainly not this. I mean, it's freedom. It's our freedom. Free speech. We got to be able to freely submit this to the rest of the world. And you know who's consuming it? The young people, as I say, but as far as the nations, the big producers and consumers, that's the United States and Britain. Melanie Phillips says, there's a deeper problem still than pornography, and that's the destruction of the sexual contract by women themselves. She talks a little bit about feminism from the 1970s, 80s, and so on. It says men were to be regarded instead merely as sperm donors, walking wallets, transient sexual partners, and occasional au pairs, it says. So yeah, the man's role, he was diminished, not needed. The women could go it alone. She says the result has been catastrophic for men, women, and children, set loose from the sexual contract, which had tamed them by binding them into responsible family life. Some boys and men reverted to caveman patterns of brutish behavior. It's just led to the destruction of the foundation of our society, as Mr. Armstrong called it, the stable family structure. She says, in other words, this is her conclusion, in other words, the reason so many women feel so unsafe is not because the entire male sex is a menace, nor because there aren't enough laws to criminalize them. It's because of the seismic cultural shift in which the bargain of mutual interest between the sexes has been torn up. Women are unsafe in large measure because the culture has become degenerate, and there's not one politician brave enough to do a thing about it. Not one leader brave enough to do anything about this menace to society. This other story in the Daily Mail talks about this young girl who, a teenager, who met some guy on social media and they met in the park somewhere. He was nice for about 5 minutes as they exchanged pleasantries. And then as the article explains, 5 minutes in, I mean, he made it clear why he was there. It was to grope her. It was to make out with her. It was to have sex with her. And when she wouldn't do that, boy, his attitude changed in a hurry. And then thankfully she got out of there. And then he started sending her links to all this pornography and such. The Daily Mail says she's one of a growing number of young girls already exhausted by and angry about the stream of sexual coercion from boys their own age. Where once we might have expected only adult women to have to deal with such harassment, our daughters now find themselves confronting an aggressive sexual culture when they are barely out of primary school. It says, gone are the days when young people's sexuality could develop at a natural pace. Now they are fast-tracked through this phase by pornography. It means that even if, like this gal, they don't view it themselves, it has radicalized the way boys behave towards them. Now the article goes into more disgusting behavior, and I'll spare you from that. But what a total breakdown we're witnessing. Jesus said it would be just like the days of Sodom and Gomorrah. Jesus said it would be just like the days before the flood. The prophecy, we shouldn't, it's shocking. It's shocking when you read some of these things, but it shouldn't surprise us. Not given what happened before the flood, not given what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah, and not given what Jesus himself prophesied. We're truly living in the last days, and we need God's intervention. We need God to intervene before we completely destroy ourselves. When we come back, we'll conclude, or rather continue. I don't know if I'll conclude it, but we'll continue with our study on enduring to the end. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back. Oh,
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Yesterday, I gave you several examples of whether in Bible history or secular history of individuals that really had a fighting spirit, and they did not give up or quit. And that's why, in large part, that's why they made such a such an impressive mark on this world. Herbert Armstrong, Winston Churchill, you could go right down the list. As I say, they never make movies in Hollywood about someone who famously quit, who gave up, or if they do, there's not many of them. The ones that people want to go see are the stories of courage and faith and persistence, sticking to it, stick-to-itiveness, as we often say in this church, perseverance. Notice what Christ said in Matthew 24, verse 11. It says, "And many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive many, and because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold." That's what's happened to so many of God's people in these last days. They've lost the love of God. I talked about this with the students yesterday. How important it is for us to be filled with God's love and unselfish, outgoing concern for others. The Laodiceans lost this. Their love waxed cold. And it says in verse 13, "But he that shall endure to the end, the same shall be saved." We have to endure to the end. Does this sound like a once saved, always saved doctrine? You answer an emotional appeal at some Sunday morning service in this world, and then you've got it made? A lot of people think that. Jesus said you've got to endure to the end. Endure what? Well, we're fighting against our adversary and the ways of this world, the filth, as I talked about in the last segment, and our own human nature, deceitful and wicked, hostile to God and His law. Only God miraculously can change that nature into a divine nature. That word for endure, if you look at the Greek, it means to remain, to bear trials, that is, to have fortitude, to persevere. Thayer says this, "To persevere absolutely and emphatically under misfortunes and trials, to hold fast to one's faith, to endure, bear bravely and calmly, absolutely, to bear ill treatment, to do it bravely and calmly." We're going to need that kind of endurance, that kind of bravery. Matthew 10 and verse 22 says, "And you shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that endures to the end shall be saved." See, what good are so many of these other laws of success, as I said yesterday, if you don't have perseverance? All else counts for nothing in the end if you quit. You could get off to a fantastic start, but if you quit, what good is it? What did that fast start accomplish? We have to finish. We have to endure to the end. Mr. Armstrong writes this in The Seven Laws of Success. He said, "Yes, 9 in 10 at least once or twice in a lifetime, come to the place where they appear to be totally defeated. All is lost, he writes. Apparently, that is. They give up and quit when just a little more determined hanging on, just a little more faith and perseverance, just a little more stick-to-itiveness would have turned apparent certain failure into glorious success. If they just would have hung on, if they just would have stuck with it, if they just would have endured to the end. They didn't do it. They didn't do it. They didn't have the perseverance. I just want to spin over here to a couple of verses in 2 Timothy 4. I don't have them in my notes, but verse 3, notice this. It says, for the time, this is Paul, the last letter he writes to his assistant, his trusted assistant, Timothy, and he says to him, the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears, and they shall turn away their ears from the truth and be turned unto fables. They won't be able to endure just soundness, the soundness of God's truth. People in this society today, they just flat out reject it. Now, in God's family, we embrace it and we hold on to it. We're proud of it. We fight for it. We defend it. We proclaim it. At least we do through programs like this. We're not on a mission, a soul-saving crusade, door-to-door, I mean. But we certainly do make the truth available for as long as God makes that possible. But look at what we're going up against. And look at the many casualties that we've seen in this final era of God's church. Heart-wrenching. You look at some of the tragedies we're seeing in the physical sense, happening to our nations. Look at the wave of destruction, though, that happened soon after Herbert Armstrong's death in 1986. This is from Mr. Armstrong's autobiography. He says, the servant of God cannot stand still. Either he advances and grows spiritually against opposition and obstacles, or he falls by the wayside to be rejected. It's not an easy road. He says, this incident just described is but one of many of its kind. He talks about the disappointment of someone that turned away from the truth. He says, later I was to encounter many more whom God used to help me and his work, only to see them endure but a while and fall aside. He says, several of these have been among our closest and most loved personal friends. These experiences have provided our greatest suffering in God's service. They were pictured by Jesus' parable of the sower and the seed. It seems, and listen to this, he says, it seems the majority who start out on this straight and narrow road of opposition, persecution, trial and test, self-restraint, continuous attitude of repentance, overcoming, growing, fail to endure until the end. It seems the majority who start out in this way fail to endure. That's in Herbert Armstrong's autobiography. This was what perhaps caused the greatest amount of grief and suffering in his life and in his wife's life. The fact that they had so many close friends, family, turn away from God's truth, quit. They gave up. They stopped fighting for God. They surrendered to the forces of evil. They surrendered to the devil. They caved into the pressure, as I said yesterday. Satan loves to intimidate. And we've got to stand firm. We've got to resist against it. God is testing us. He's testing us to see if we'll just lazily go along with the flow, with the crowd. Or if we'll stubbornly hold on to the truth. If we'll swim upstream. I gave you that example yesterday of Jacob and how he just refused to let go of the one who became Jesus Christ. he held on and demanded a blessing. Pretty amazing, the tenacious spirit in that man. And God saw it and said, hey, I want to change your name to something that's more like a prince, a royal prince, because I love your fighting spirit. Mark 4, in verse 16, speaking of this parable Mr. Armstrong referred to, he says, and these are they likewise, which are sown on stony ground, these seeds, that is, who, when they have heard the word, immediately receive it with gladness. Well, they receive the word and they're just overjoyed. They're excited. They're happy. It says in verse 17, and have no root in themselves, and so endure but for a time. Afterward, when affliction or persecution arises for the word's sake, immediately they are offended. See, once it gets difficult, then they say, you know what? I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to fight. I don't want to resist against the pulls of the flesh. I just want to let go. I just want to give in. It's easier. It's easier to just follow along. And I know the problems around, they're pretty bad, but look, I don't want to resist against it anymore. In an open letter to the newly begotten, Mr. Armstrong said many years ago, you have entered upon a new life, a life of great happiness and joy, a life to continue forever. Yet in this present evil world, it will not be an easy life. See, we've got to count the cost. So we make sure that we finish. It says, as a matter of fact, you have left behind the easy way, the popular broad road that leads to destruction. You have passed the crossroads and turned off onto the narrow, rutty, bumpy, rocky, and hard and difficult road that very few people in this world ever are willing to enter. But it leads to success, to usefulness, to happiness, joy, and eternal life. He goes on and says, it's not going to come easy. You've got to be willing to pay the price. You've got to fight against temptations. You're going to have to work your way through trials and persecutions, hardships. But it's worth it. It's worth it if you stay the course. Have that spirit, that same spirit that Mr. Armstrong had, that spirit that Winston Churchill had during those dark years in the early 1940s. Churchill once said, "We shall not flag or fail. We shall go on to the end. We shall never surrender." We're never going to surrender to these forces of evil. We're never going to surrender to that madman in Germany, that tyrant. My father said years ago, he said, one thing a leader, of course, always has to do is he must never give up fighting and be the last one to surrender. Never surrender, because he does have people that follow his lead. A leader needs to have the perseverance and the courage to go forward. There's people depending on him. Churchill again said, never give in. Never give in. Never, 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 in nothing great or small, large or petty, never give in except to convictions of honor and good sense. Winners never quit. Winners never give in. Winners never surrender. On tomorrow's show, we'll continue. There's, as I said yesterday, we have so many wonderful scriptures that support this kind of message. So we'll continue with that study as we go forward. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily radio show, and it's also the Trumpet Daily television show. If you want to submit some feedback, you can write us at td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.